So we are moving through. We did the do line cards was last. Right? The do line cards.
Yes.
And then there's a couple of neat little articles. We did that, the horoscope. We did that one. And then this is interesting. Marshall McLuhan makes a movie. Now, it's not a do line, but he was moving out of writing books. He was giving up writing books about 1969, 1970. He wanted to move into other kinds of media. So the Canadian film magazine called Take One sends their associate editor, Joe Midjuk, over to visit Mr. McLuhan to find out what's up. So Joe says, hearing rumors that Marsh McLuhan had become involved in filmmaking, we sent Take One associate editor, Joe Midjuk, a student of Professor McLuhan's, off to interview him. Okay, now, do I need to mute? Are you guys going to be quiet? I think I better mute you guys. All right, we'll mute everybody. And, you know, what happened to Alyssa? Alyssa just, people just drop off, they disappear, we don't know where they get caught
here.
In the roadkill, and they just, right, and she said she's going to go figure out how to do Skype. Nobody commented, people, they just move forward. All right, mute
all
off.
Participants are now so, muted.
Marsh McLuhan says, my film projects are slightly embryonic. I am making one on the city. That's the only film I'm actually making. I certainly plan to do some, but first I'm going to get rid of a lot of books. Books that I've already half written or three quarters written. I've got at least half a dozen to finish up. Then I'm through with books. Joe Midchuk says, forever? McLuhan, at least I hope so. But anyway, I'm not going to specify the program I have in mind. It's a bit early. Midchuk, when you finish with the books and go into films, will you work at acquiring technical expertise? McLuhan, one acquires as much expertise as one has to acquire, that's all. It's the same as writing or anything. You acquire as much education as is necessary to get the job done. The city film is being done by people who make ads for TV all the time. I don't think myself that the TV ad is very well adapted to TV. It's mostly done by film people on film terms and for film audiences. No, I think television advertising is in very poor shape, exceedingly poor shape. And on the other hand, I don't feel any great crusading need to improve advertising. Not at all. I just sit back and enjoy the stuff in all its squalor. The same thing happens to the city as happens to TV and advertising. You put an outer ring of suburb around an old city, and this automatically destroys the inner city. That's all. And if you put a new medium around an old one, it automatically destroys the old one. In the act of using the old one, it destroys it. But in destroying it, it turns it into an art form. Movies are now art form because they've been completely destroyed by TV. Now, this is simple fact. TV destroyed radio, and radio is now an art form. Glenn Gould, he was a classical composer who quit doing the classical halls. Glenn Gould makes radio programs, real arty. Now, I just came from the National Religious Broadcasting Convention. They've been using radio for simple religious culture for the last 20 years. Just exactly the period of TV. TV turned radio over to them as a serious cultural form. TV will itself be destroyed, wiped out by some laser type or some other type or satellite type of broadcasting. It will in turn become a respectable art form. The planet has been destroyed by the satellite environment and has become an art form. As art, we now recognize it as polluted. It's a mess. We've got to restore this old masterpiece. You see, the planet has now been destroyed by the satellite world and has become an old art form. We recognize it as an old masterpiece, but it's been horribly defaced by dealers, restorers, developers, etc., etc. But the Earth is capable of being renewed and restored to its original perfection as in the Garden of Eden. So we now see every part of the Earth as, it's as if it had gone through the hands of art restorers. You know, an old masterpiece that's been restored by 20th century vulgarity. And so we're going to improve it to no end. I don't see how you can go any further than that, really, having destroyed nature itself by putting satellites around and having now begun to approach the planet as a work of art. That's about as total a project as you can imagine. But that is our immediate program. We're going to reprogram and depollute every part of the planet. and it wasn't begun yesterday. Pollution is not new. Don't forget the Sahara Desert and a few little things like that. The planet's been polluted many times before, totally, and so we're going to put it in good working shape. Midjack, I know you don't like to pigeonhole things, but what is your official title on the city film? McLuhan, oh, Jane Jacobs, who's a famous philosopher of architecture. Oh, Jane, and what is your official title on the city film? Oh, Jane Jacobs and I simply scripted it. That's all. And then we make various suggestions to the makers about footage here and there and effects above all, the effects we want. We'll leave the footage very largely to him once he knows the kind of effect we want. He's got masses of footage, doesn't have to do much shooting for us. Midja, could you say something about the optical circus, which I think you're planning to do on film too, optical circus in quotes. So listen to this part. This is where it gets nutty. McLuhan says, that's purely an experimental kind of thing. Again, we're thinking of effect, capital E-F-E-C-T, effect. We want to find out what will happen if we deprive a picture of all but visual effects, take out all the known visual component. It's like a chemical experiment of isolating a particular element like oxygen from all other elements. You know what happens when you isolate oxygen? You have a very inflammable thing. We're hoping this optical circus will have a startling effect on the other senses, that people on trips, addicts of various types who are playing around with their sensory lives, in the direct contact with this extreme type of sensory thing, they will be dislocated out of habits and out of, you know, ways of involvement, that it may disengage them very suddenly, untie them, unhook them very suddenly, just yank them out. Ted Carpenter tells me, he said that by simply recording a group of natives and playing back their own voices and sounds to them, you can put them through about 1,000 years of Western culture in 5 minutes. It has the effect of 100 years of literacy, just playing back their own sounds to them on another medium. Wham! And he said it's somewhat the same with film, if they go out and make their own films and then see them. We're not sure what's going to happen. It's an experiment. We don't know what'll happen. We don't know whether we can really isolate the visual sense either. We're temporarily doing a regular scripted job for film, but the trouble with film is that it's kinetic. There's a big kinetic component. There's a big kinetic component which is non-visual. And so we're experimenting, that's all. If we knew what was going to happen, it wouldn't be an experiment. Again, we're still working on it, but we're certainly eliminating color, which is not a visual component. And we're eliminating perspective. We're eliminating the kinds of space that depend on any of the other senses except sight. And that's not easy. Sight is all mixed in with the other senses. It's very difficult to pull it off. It's an abstract. Has to be an extreme film.
All participants are now unmuted.
How was that? You like that? He's going to make a movie with you. Get rid of everything. Nothing. It never gets done.
Did he do it? Did he? No. Okay.
No. Not that I know of. It never got done. He did make the Jane Jacobs movie. You can see that. That might even be online. It's called Burning. It's a line from Finnegan's Wake, Burning Wood, W-O-U-L-D. And all it is just a lot of footage of big traffic around Toronto. And then people trying to have pastoral lives in the city, doing this and that. A lot of just documenting city life with this emphasis on the huge traffic coming into Toronto. McLuhan's objective was to stop the Spadina Express. They were going to put an express right through Toronto, like they tried to do in New York City, which Jane Jacobs successfully blocked in New York City against Robert Moses, the famous highway architect. So McLuhan, he led an actual protest against the potential Spadina Expressway. Nowadays, everybody is pissed off at McLuhan if they knew about it, because they didn't put the highway through, and Toronto is just paralyzed with traffic jams. It's like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, they shouldn't have put the Spadina Expressway, but they're so embedded in car culture, they're stuck with it, so they say, well, the heck with the Garden of Eden. Let's just put an expressway through to get out of this traffic jam. So it's pretty ugly in Toronto on that level, and people who know blame McLuhan. But that's his problem, not ours, right? No, he's saying
that's that creation.
If it was, yes, if it's typed wrong, where he says, where did he say it? We want to find out what will happen if we deprive a picture of all but visual effects. Take out all the known visual component. That's not written right. They're taking out everything but the visual component.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you heard that.
I remember telling people about this, and I concluded, it's not here, but in my mind, he would just run the projector with nothing in it. It'd just be a blank white thing on the wall. You know, imagine running an old-fashioned camera,
it's like the
projector, with no film.
Like the painting.
It'd just be a white flat. Yeah, be a white flat abstraction on the wall with no content. That's what he's saying. We're working on it. We're certainly eliminating culture.
There are some paintings like are like only
what?
White canvas, gray number one, black 22.
Yeah.
These
yeah.
Conceptual paintings
right.
that are only one color.
So, yeah, there's that guy, whatever his name is, he's white on white.
Like that.
Cy Twombly. He painted white on white.
Yeah.
But he says, we're eliminating color, which is not a visual component. And you're supposed to say, what do you mean? Color is visual. And then McLuhan would say, no, it's tactile. So eliminating color, so you no content there. Eliminating perspective. We're eliminating the kinds of space that depend on any of the other senses except sight. And that's not easy. Sight is mixed up with all the other senses, so he's actually going to bring all the senses back in if it's mixed up. So it's just another bunch of contradictory bullshit that McLuhan, as Ian said, didn't know that was a fucking clue who he was or what he was doing.
Really?
Fucking idiot.
So
he wasn't trying to be mysterious.
Yeah, he was trying to be mysterious.
So was the idea, Bob, of eliminating color, he was talking about, will continue to depollute the environment. Depolluting.
Yes.
Used that word. So eliminating color.
He said, okay, we're in a tactile, colorful environment, and he wants to create an anti-environment. So he wants to create nothing but flat visual space, because visual space doesn't exist anymore. So he's retrieving visual space by having a camera project light on a wall.
and to consider color as pollution. To consider color as pollution
yes.
is a very different way to look at that.
I dare you to go around telling people that. It took guts to tell people color was pollution.
All my greeny food farming friends.
Yeah.
Need to make white food from now on.
Yeah.
Now, Bob, earlier in the article, McLuhan was making reference that something would take over TV and
lasers.
It makes that
the laser beam, the hologram.
Yeah, and it makes that environment nostalgic for, you know, we retrieve it in a nostalgic kind of way. And it occurred to me, we still call Achieve Radio radio. And when I tell people I listen to Payday on Saturday Night, I call it a radio show. Is that a nostalgic euphemism? Because it's not radio technically anymore, right?
Well, it is experientially radio, but it's technically digital. We couldn't play the music that I'm playing without digital technology, you know, post-analog radio.
Right. It's audio.
But it is radio, the way people understand. It's a talk show format, sort of, but it's a little spiffier.
I wonder if it's retrieving a sense of nostalgia of the radio environment.
Yeah, the voice retrieves a lot. All voice is obsolete. You have to be texting,
nice.
You know, anagrams. So... speech is, I go into this on the latest video explaining how speech is such a dead environment. Now, that's why ION comes in to revitalize speech.
the whole creation, actually.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, let me start this dew line. This is McLuhan Dew Line, Volume 2, Number 3, November 1969. And it's a big poster. And several posters. And the first poster has at the top the word oikos, O-I-K-O-S, with an asterisk beside it. So you go to the bottom.
Like economy.
And it says, you're right, it says oikos, Greek. What? I can't have people interrupting me. Okay, you ready? Greek for a house is a root of both the English economy and ecology. Economy, that's right. Greek, a house. It means house, and it's a root of both the English economy and ecology. So oikos is where economy and ecology comes from, and it means house. Okay? Now you may speak. Time's up. Okay. We begin with the poster. All right, so I'm going to mute everybody so we make good quality, then I'll open it up for you to laugh at the right times, okay?
Mute. All participants are now muted.
So underneath the word oikos is a plaque, a sign, and it says Hollywood, and it's quoting Mae West. It's not at all the same anymore, said Mae West. I think it's the way they're running their business. The old studios are going. Whatever, it's not at all the same. They've lost a sense of class. There's no flair, none. It's gone. So that's Mae West complaining about Hollywood, I guess, in the 60s, 50 years ago. So the essay begins. Ecological man is now determined. Now, remember, we're reading in the film thing that the satellite turns the Earth into an art form and probably the media into an art form. So this is what Marx is going to talk about. Ecological man is now determined to put his house in order. Economy, the word economy, in pre-market times meant the totality of human social interests, gradually becoming more and more specialized. The word ecology has come back into the language as total field theory from biology. Ecology has come back into the language as total field theory from biology. The study of the environments of organisms instead of the mere study of organisms, has yielded such important insights that the method has been carried over very rapidly to the study of man and society. Thus, Jacques Ellul, in Propaganda, the book Propaganda, explains his discovery that propaganda does not consist in the conveying of messages by press or other media, but consists in the action of the total culture, in brackets, language, food, work, ads, entertainment, etc., upon its participants. In other words, McLuhan has quoted Jacques Ellul before. So he's saying the same fucking thing he said in the other fucking dew lines. All right? Nothing new here. Move along. So I'm looking for the exact spread here. Okay, so thus Jacques Ellul in Propaganda explains the discovery that propaganda of man and... Thus Jacques Ellul in Propaganda explains his discovery that propaganda does not consist in the conveying of messages by press or other media, but consists in the action of the total culture, in brackets, language, food, work, ads, entertainment, etc., upon its participants. So it consists in the action of the total culture upon its participants. The idea that propaganda in quotes, consists of packaged concepts peddled to unsuspecting citizens is not tenable. As we move out of the age of hardware and specialism into the all-involving and personally demanding electric world, we experience a reversal of form and function in work and society. specialist work and learning is no longer tolerable because it alienates man from his newly integrated self by establishing arbitrary goals and patterns of life. We read in the book of the I Ching, in brackets, the Chinese Book of the Changes, then it says in big capital letters, by the law of change, whatever has reached its extreme must turn back, unquote. This flip of events via speeded-up technology now prescribes a revocation of Emma Lazarus's invitation to, quote, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores, unquote. These we are quite able to produce in abundance as our specialized hardware modes of production and distribution go into head-on collision with the new ecological world of electrotechnics. I'll read that again. These we are quite able to produce, so we're able to produce the wretched refuse of our teeming shores. These we are quite able to produce in abundance as our specialized hardware modes of production and distribution go into head-on collision with the new ecological world of electrotechnics. The fragmenting technology Gutenberg's fostered intense centralism in all outer organization, religious, civic, and military. The Gutenberg specialism that permitted the first mechanization of an ancient handicraft also created specialism in human faculties and feelings. Specialism in feelings. The dream of the Superman also came with Gutenberg. Marlowe's Tamburlaine is only a handy example of large tribe of semi-human heroes and anti-heroes that populate the stage and imaginations of the Renaissance. Read that again. The dream of the Superman also came with Gutenberg. Marlowe's Tamburlaine is only a handy example of a large tribe of semi-human heroes and anti-heroes that populate the stage and imaginations of the Renaissance. Machiavelli's villains in quotes, are merely moral specialists endowed with private goals and unimpeded by ordinary human scruples or human diversity. Out Caesar, out Neil, meaning Caesar or bust. So Machiavelli's villains, in quotes villains, are merely moral specialists endowed with private goals and unimpeded by ordinary human scruples or human diversity. Caesar or bust. Renaissance individuality, in quotes, was one of the results of this new specialism in ejecting traditional man from his all-involving roles in italics, in feudal society. Read that again. Renaissance individuality was one of the results of this new specialism in ejecting traditional man from his all-involving roles in feudal society. Vast energy was released by the fissioning of old roles. Machiavelli saw at once that the mechanical release from the feudal hierarchies of personal devotion meant that, quote, each man has his price, unquote. Fragmentation is itself the basis of all pricing, and until Gutenberg produced the first means of exact and uniform repetition of products, there was no real basis for a uniform price system or a market in the modern sense. Only coinage or currency possessed any uniform and repeatable character. The products for exchange on the market of that time were utterly without such character. A manuscript book afforded only a second-hand market, second-hand in quotes, since no two manuscripts had equal value even when they came from the same scriptorium. The Gutenberg press thus became the basic pattern for all future industrial manufacture, regardless of the materials that went into the product. Okay, now unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
Any comments? Sound familiar?
What was that? Yes. What was that reference to specialism in emotions? Or Gutenberg created specialism in emotions, or?
Yeah, that
I don't know if it was emotions,
phrase.
But I wrote emotions.
Feelings.
Yeah.
No, feelings.
Feelings.
The Gutenberg specialism. Yeah. The Gutenberg specialism that permitted the first mechanization of an ancient handicraft also created specialism in human faculties and feelings. Anybody else got a comment?
I like the statement. I just caught ejecting traditional man from all evolving roles.
No, I think it's evolving roles.
Evolving my.
It was a Renaissance individualism.
Yeah, you agree.
Yep.
Right.
It was Renaissance individualism is where she got the evolving roles.
Well, it turned into roles.
To see if they're in
says here.
The portraits are become important.
Yes, self-portraits and portraits. So it says Renaissance individuality. That's in quotes. Renaissance individuality was one of the results of this new specialism in ejecting traditional man from his all-involving roles. So the roles of feudal society were dumped. Vast energy was released by the fissioning, splitting of old roles. And we return to roles in the 20th century. Get that. There's no jobs in the 20th century, only roles.
No jobs in the 20th century, only roles. And if, I don't know, I get the sense that there's a desperate cling to some sort of traditional role that, you know, people are trying to cling to a traditional role when the...
Shakespeare's plays was that. That's Shakespeare.
Again.
He wrote plays about the medieval period. A great nostalgia. He made it great art, but... Or maybe, I don't know if it's great art, but a lot of people think it's great art, even though they can't understand anything that the Shakespeare says now, unless they specialize in it. But the...
When it was taught in school, they didn't teach it that way. You know, the way you're just describing
they
it
do.
Now, that's Shakespeare.
No. Wait, what way did they teach it and what way didn't they teach it? What are you saying?
From a perspective of McLuhan, that Shakespeare was a portrayal of this statement of ejecting traditional man from his all-evolving roles.
Yes, he would show. He was showing the new figure, the Renaissance individual, the man of talent, that's Iago, and how he fucks up the role player, Othello. It's the clash of the new form against the old form. Shakespeare had that down. He knew what was at risk or at play.
Okay.
But that's all I know. I don't know if I've ever seen Othello. I mean, I looked at some of it, but it's pretty hard to read. So I'm not a skilled Shakespeare person, but...
Me either.
I know the broader meaning of the play.
In my
for
high school
broader
English,
scenarios.
In a high school English class, we covered Romeo and Juliet by going to the movie. So, yeah, I have nothing more to say. I have no idea about Shakespeare, personally.
You say you covered Romeo and Juliet by going to the movie?
Yes, in my high school English class. We went to the movie.
Well, I've often thought, I got to look at those. There must be some theater group that did every Shakespeare play somewheres. And I was thought years ago, I should look at them, each one of them. Maybe even have a book to follow on, but I never did it. I was too busy preparing for the real work. The drama of non-Bob versus Bob. That's what we're witnessing here. The not Bob versus the Bob as a solution. I'm not going to any palm tree riddled places to sit and meditate. I'm staying back here.
You're already there.
In the interval between there and here to fix it.
Okay, there you go.
And I found a good doctor, Dr. Carolyn Dean, who can actually contribute beneficial products. So I can pull off my agenda that I set up 800 years ago.
Yes,
at the earliest.
Kiss that angel every morning. You played
that
song. Yes,
kiss an angel every morning.
Yes, you played Kiss an Angel. That was a good job, Bob.
Yes, but
I'm thinking, like, because I did this methodology of painting in the Pinacotec.
Yeah.
But, in the Renaissance, people moved from the fields, from the feudal castles to the cities. The cities grow. And there is also this the importance of the perspective, not in nature, but in the city, in the space that is like second nature.
Yeah. Yes.
And there are all these different techniques being developed in all fields of production for the cities. It's not only the fields, but there's a lot of manufacture.
Yeah.
And for example, Botticelli or Leonardo, they will do all types of things. They will do fabrics, they will do parties, they will do decorations for castles.
Yeah. Like, they did
people were not
tasks.
That specialized.
Right.
Not really.
They were developing, they were doing specialist tasks, but they were not specialized in the way they did it. They were making specialist products, not as specialist as later, but they were riding on the effect of beginning a visual space before the printing press, or just as it was coming in. A burst of creativity.
Yes, and there's also much more commerce with Africa and Asia and all these exotic things coming in, like the silks and spices.
Yeah.
So it's not only like the regional, they start to be aware of the world, of traveling, of far places.
Yeah. They started to see more. Their eyes were pushed out of their local environment. They moved towards a non-colored world. Gradually. So you get that black and white clothing of the 19th century. No more color. So, let me read poster 2. Poster 2 has the headline. Remember, we had Oikos and poster 1. These are big posters. Poster 2, it says, the end of steel and or steel. So, the first steel is STEEL, end of the steel companies. Oh, I got to mute you guys.
All participants are now muted.
So, the end of steel and or steel. Versus collective responsibility. So, you know, corporate criminality, you might think of Watergate that was coming up. Okay, here's what McLuhan writes. He starts off by citing a book on the mafia called Theft of the Nation, subtitled The Structure and Organized Crime in America by Donald Cressy of Harper and Row, 1969. This book is a wild toot on the burglar alarm long after the swag has disappeared. Mr. Cressy's volume is, in fact, a study of the return of the oral tradition to the United States. The United States is the only country that ever started from a base of print technology. The mafia, of whom he writes, are an old, oral, tribal society that both in the radio age and the TV age found that they could take the upper hand in a society based exclusively on obsolete written codes and contracts. He announces that they are taking over the old establishments at just the time that the legal profession is trying to arrange for ombudsmen or publicly hired fixers in quotes, to bail the law out of its many hang-ups. The legal profession is becoming aware that written legal codes will not work in the electric age. Written codes serve neither penal nor therapeutic ends. It is no, colon, Written codes serve neither penal nor therapeutic ends, colon. It is no longer possible to decide whether criminals in quotes, should go to mental or penal institutions. To many, organized crime now appears as indistinguishable from the existing social order. As our world returns to the oral tradition by virtue of sheer electric speed and simultaneity of events, the entire planet becomes as a single household or ecology. Corporate and private responsibility and criminality alike become socially collective involvements. All right, I got to go next part. In counterpoint to Donald Cressy's frantic tugs on the burglar alarm, is the intermittent beep in Monopoly by Joseph Goulden, Putnam, 1968. Mr. Goulden is amazed to discover that AT&T is a super government quotes. AT&T is a corporate state, a super government, if you will, whose presence in the United States is felt more keenly on a daily basis than even that of the federal government, unquote. AT&T is directly involved in every kind of electric transmission of information, including the satellites. Moreover, quote, it is a unique monopoly whose profits are guaranteed, whose investment is risk-free, and whose conduct is largely outside the control of government, the customers it serves, even the 3 million individuals and institutions that share its ownership. It is a unique monopoly whose profits are guaranteed, whose investment is risk-free, and whose conduct is largely outside the control of government, the customers it serves, even the 3 million individuals and institutions that share its ownership. Mr. Goulden, in short, regards AT&T as a vast pollutant in the body politic, a virus invader. He is up against the same paradox that we encounter in organized crime in quotes. Crime on a sufficiently large and pervasive scale easily becomes a new social order, usurping the old one. So that's true. That's what happened in the 80s. The telephone, merely by virtue of its speed as an information carrier, tends to ignore all existing boundaries, legal, political, geographic, or moral. To try to fit such a unified world system into any existing category, bureaucracy, or business, or government is to ignore the fragmentary components that entered into the formation of those earlier organizations. The new environmental form has a far stronger grip on past and present than any previous form of communication. In 1902, the old frontier of the Wild West was just about to end. That fact is shown in its new entertainment value. When the Virginian, in Owen Wister's novel of 1902, gets off the railway train at the end of Steel, he stands and watches the train disappear towards civilization. Then he quotes, McLuhan quotes the book. Where is this? The quote goes, with him, so the Virginian is watching the train go back towards civilization. With him now, the eastbound departed slowly into that distance whence I had come. I stared after it as it went its way to the far shores of civilization. It grew small in the unending gulf of space until all sign of its presence was gone, save a faint skein or smoke, which I don't have. Where is the rest of this? Looks like the bottom space is faint smoke, or maybe it goes over here. Oh, okay. It grew small in the unending gulf of space until all sign or its presence was gone, save a faint skein or skin of smoke against the evening sky. And now my lost trunk came back into my thoughts, and Medicine Bow seemed a lonely spot. A sort of ship had left me marooned in a foreign ocean. The Pullman was comfortably steaming home to port. End of quote. So then McCoon says, the old frontier began where the steel ended, S-T-E-E-L. A frontier is trackless and mapless and opaque. That is where we are today. Today, the end of steel is where bureaucracy ends and where the computer begins. We're on a new frontier that echoes and resonates with messages that have not yet been decoded. Then it has a big print, but not as big as a top capital statement. It says, the new frontier is ecological. The new frontier has been announced by multiple pollution panics. Now remember, ecological is not a known word in November 69. It's just beginning to gather its audience. You know, you're going to have Earth Day in a few months later in November, in spring, April, May of 1980. So underneath the new frontier is ecological, the new frontier has been announced by multiple pollution panics. So it says, ecological field theory is the mark of the 20th century intelligence, beginning with the rise of anthropology in the later 19th century. Anthropology was defined in the dictionary about 1910 as, quote, the study of man embracing woman, unquote. This may sound to some like an advanced description of the novels of D.H. Lawrence, but as a return to oikos, to the unified governing of total communities as if they were private households. Now, where's the next part? I guess this is where it begins. So continuing, this is the second half of the poster, the right column side. Anthropology did not undertake to study the economic or marital life of any society. It did not undertake to study the political or dietary or any other special aspect of the societies within its ken. Anthropology took the total society, its language, its skills, its traditions, and its rituals. There is no alternative. Archaic or pre-literate societies are integral, seamless webs. As more and more scholars became engaged with such totally involving studies, in which every portion of the subject resonated with every other part, as in a careful musical composition, they began to extend their new awareness towards a civilized world which for 2,500 years has run on principles of classification and specialism of people and their interests. Ecological studies were first born from the improved means of travel, which enabled anthropologists to visit remote societies. Now they are based on the means of the instant retrieval of information. At the same time that Western scholars were gaining familiarity with the integral and organic patterns of archaic cultures, the telegraph and electric circuitry began to impart an inclusive character to Western institutions. The very idea of the private citizen and of a society in which all men were equal before a written code of laws had been made possible by Western phonetic literacy. Here's in brackets, I've explained in the Gutenberg Galaxy why other forms of literacy have never impaired this peculiar character of the separate individual in a society of equals to any part of the world. Why other forms of literacy have never imparted this peculiar character of the separate individual in a society of equals. Okay. I have explained in the Gutenberg Galaxy why other forms of literacy have never imparted this peculiar character of the separate individual in a society of equals to any part of the world, outside the Greco-Roman orbit. So outside the world, outside the Greco-Roman, had to be in the Greco-Roman scholars. You had to hang out with Eric Havelock. So that would be the Greek Greco-Roman orbit. Then you would have this attempt to kill somebody. And then there's another part. So to any part of the world, outside the Greco-Roman world. So why other forms of literacy have never been imparted this peculiar character. I read that wrong. I've explained in the Gutenberg Galaxy why other forms of literacy have never imparted this peculiar character of the separate individual in a society of equals to any part of the world, outside the Greco-Roman orbit. Oh, okay. So if the alphabet didn't get there, you wouldn't have these issues. If it got there, it would be the Greco-Roman orbit. And then you have to be your relation of literacy to the world around you. inside the Greco-Roman orbit. That seems to be what it's saying. To any part of the world, outside the Greco-Roman orbit. So you get outside the Greco-Roman orbit. I don't know what you do. And then you go outside that world. You take off for the beaches of California. To any part of the world, outside the Greco-Roman orbit. Today, the electrotechnical speed-up has enveloped the 2,500-year-old phonetic literate forms with total new environments of nonverbal and resonant information. A kind of evolutionary process can be discerned in our developing technologies. They display a pattern of increasing etherealization. Etherealization, I think you got from Bucky Fuller, and it's in quotes here. It is as if we have acquired the power to do more and more with less and less, until we may seem to reach the stage of doing everything with nothing. That would be what Joyce called, quote, the abnealization of the atom, unquote. So, that may be that. So that's the first poster. Okay, we're going to go to the second poster. Third poster. Oh, I better check.
All participants are now unmuted.
How's the attention span? Still awake?
Well, there's a lot there. I think it's quite interesting. Yeah, hello?
Yes, we're here.
Okay.
We're here.
The ideas about the house. What's your house like? In the Renaissance, there were these city states, but then they went to develop into what are more abstract things like corporations and when you were talking about the synarchy, how they wanted to divide the one world they want to create into Europe, Africa, America, Asia, blah, blah.
Yes.
And,
I hear you.
Yes, because you read a lot, so I'm trying to remember everything.
Did you say I write a lot? Is that what you said?
No, you read a lot about yes, about how this economy, the house, what we consider our house, is not anymore like only the city, but these abstract environments like the corporations or social networks. Those are like the new environments we engage as our ecology, our environments in which we are living, in which we are interacting.
Well, the visual space of the house, the four walls, is gone. You're watching TV back then. You're in a different kind of spatial setup. At least, and so you want to merge with that. So you make adjustments to your house. You knock down walls and put in a patio. You try to show more window activity in the house. Excuse me, what happened in the suburbs in the 50s and 60s.
Yes,
okay, I'm going to read the next.
For example, in countries like Mexico, where it's not the government really that governs, but there are these corporations or these mafias controlling different territories,
they're just expanding.
It's like a more complicated type of ecology. is not the city or the nation, because these are now erased. The different layers of ecologies of environments interacting.
Say software environments. The hardware of the cities are surrounded by software environments. Not just environments, software environments. That's how you say it. Information circuitry.
Right.
And they're tiny. Well, where's the space of electric circuits? So you have the mafias in Mexico are able to gather and organize themselves really fast through telephones and whatever they were doing 50 years ago, and they bypass the old Mexican hardware bureaucracy. And that happened to every country in the world. So the head of the mafia would sit there in New Orleans with billions coming in every day, which is the wealth coming in from all the different enterprises they were doing, largely for a leisure society. Drugs, gambling, you know, prostitution, rock and roll, all the software entertainments and all the services of a leisure society was what the mafia sat on.
And the whole article, or you started the whole thing with corporate criminality versus collective responsibility.
Right. There was private responsibility in the literate era. When the global media took over in the 20th century, people started to be politically correct. They wore their conscience on their sleeve. And they actually got very, quote, immoral in their private lives. But the whole thing was to look good for whatever social pressure was happening or theme, like no smoking. So collective responsibility versus the fact that older environments could hijack through the electric circuitry other environments, and that would be corporate criminality.
And the,
so the
corporate
legal
criminality
couldn't keep up.
But corporate criminality served that, like you said, the elite or the comfortable class. It was like creating. They served both environments.
It didn't serve the elites. The elites' children became heroin addicts.
Yes.
So if you had old-fashioned wealth, and then the electric software wealth goes around you, it wiped out all civilized categories and hierarchies, so that the bankers became harassed people. They had to deal with more and more responsibilities. And their children ran away and got into drugs.
And another prophetic statement was that written legal codes will not, I don't know if it was written legal codes will not serve in the electric age or will not work in the electric age. Which allowed that, you know, the mafias to take over. They ignored the written codes, the legal.
Will not apply.
Yeah.
Apply in the electric age.
Yeah, Alexander Graham Bell, when he made the telephone, he didn't foresee the chaos he was unleashing.
Right.
Lychee jelly.
Yes.
The rise of lychee jelly. It fits. It's good. We did lychee jelly.
Yes. Yes, and the synergy.
No,
yes,
get to
Bob.
Hear. It's the synergy. The synergus. What was it?
Your
I was
manager.
Say, what was the first part? I should find what I read. Written codes. That was. The legal profession. Yeah, let's go back to
written
theft
legal
of
codes.
The nation. Yeah, theft of the nation: the structure and operations of organized crime in America by Donald Cressy. Now McLuhan's going to say what he's concerned about happened a long time before. McLuhan always used to pronounce that everybody's new awareness and new concerns were rather too late. He says this book is a wild toot on the burglar alarm long after the swag has disappeared. You know what that thing about the horse shut the gate?
Swag.
The horse
now,
has already left.
Do you know what swag means? At least
yeah,
in the...
swag. Yeah, I know what it means today. I don't know what it meant back then. I never heard
well,
it.
Well, it's an acronym
then.
For. It's but, an acronym for stuff we all get.
No, okay.
Like
Mr. Cressy's volume. Right. Stuff we all get. Mr. Cressy's volume is, in fact, a study of the return of the oral tradition to the United States. The United States is the only country that ever started from a base of print technology. The Mafia, of whom he writes, are an old oral tribal society that both in the radio age and the TV age found that they could take the upper hand in a society based exclusively on obsolete written codes and contracts. Here's McLuhan, a respected professor, saying stuff that was not respectable. You weren't allowed to talk about the Mafia back then. You weren't allowed to think that they'd taken over. But McLuhan knew they did, and he knew why. Cressy announces it.
Can you say more about the Mafia being an old oral society?
That's what they were. They're from Italy. And then there was different mafias. These guys never went to university.
Oh, they weren't print.
Punched
okay.
Their way
okay.
into. They punched their way into control of
intellectuals.
Leisure activities.
Yeah.
No, they ignored the intellectuals. They provided the prostitutes for the intellectuals.
Right.
They found that they could take, with the electric media, they found they could take the upper hand in a society based exclusively on obsolete written codes and contracts. Cressy announces that they are taking over the old establishments at just the time that the Mafia are taking over the old semi-industrial establishments at just the time that the legal profession is trying to arrange for ombudsmen or publicly hired fixers to bail the law out of its many hang-ups. The law was itself hung up. The legal profession is becoming aware that written legal codes will not work in the electric age. Written codes serve neither penal nor therapeutic ends. It is no longer possible to decide whether criminals should go to mental or penal institutions. To many, organized crime now appears as indistinguishable from the existing social order. As our world returns to the oral tradition by virtue of sheer electric speed and simultaneity of events, the entire planet becomes as a single household or ecology. Corporate and private responsibility and criminality alike become socially collective involvements. That means people get involved in judging how un-mafia your company is. Okay, we're going to the next poster. Let me mute.
All participants are now muted.
So, the third poster has a big sign that apparently was in Ben Franklin's office. This big sign said, "This is a printing office, crossroads of civilization, refuge of all the arts," smaller letters, "against the ravages of time, refuge of all the arts against the ravages of time, armory of fearless truth against whispering rumor, incessant trumpet of trade. From this place, words may fly abroad, not to perish on waves of sound, not to vary with the writer's hand, but fixed in time, having been verified in proof. Friend, you stand on sacred ground. This is a printing office." So that's the sign that the guy who started the United States as a visually biased culture, Ben Franklin, built up the reading abilities of Americans. Now, let's see the text that McLuhan provides underneath that sign. "As we approach the 70s, we need to take our bearings, old and new." See? Our bearings. There's not just new bearings, there's old bearings, old environments. They don't go away. "As we approach the 70s, we need to take our bearings, old and new. The facts and ideals associated with the Ben Franklin and Emma Lazarus proclamation Wait a minute. Proclamation. Where are we? Looks like a sentence. I missed a sentence somehow. As we approach the 70s, we need to take our bearings old and new. The facts and ideals associated with the Ben Franklin and Emma Lazarus proclamations. Don't know what the next sentence would be. Then it says world of electrotechnics and the computer. Let me just see if there's hidden somewhere. Still looking. Oh, it looks like we lost a sentence. So, the facts and ideals associated with the Ben Franklin and Emma Lazarus proclamations, McLuhan will say, are obsolete. Then it says, Gutenberg taught us how to mechanize any operation by breaking it into a series of static steps, thus eliminating the need for individual skill or personal involvement. When the work processes involving human services is broken up into specialized and repeatable tasks, it is possible to scrap human nature. So the human being is going to get scrapped. The whole planet got scrapped, you know, with the satellite, but in an earlier phase, the human being is scrapped. When an individual has only to perform separate, specialist, repeatable tasks on a semi-line pattern, it matters not whether he is bright or dull, loyal or malicious, dedicated or impertinent. That is why Emma Lazarus could confidently envisage a superhuman life for any number of unskilled immigrants. Bring me your wretched huddled masses. That is why Emma Lazarus could confidently envisage a superhuman life for any number of unskilled immigrants. By the time of Ben Franklin, more than two centuries after Gutenberg, both work and society had been pushed far along specialist lines of thought, feeling, and perception. The Emma Lazarus boast that maimed and fragmented people could be rallied to produce a superstate is a simple fact of mechanization and specialism complementary to Ben Franklin's manifesto. Then it has the Emma Lazarus quote in big letters below the column, below the two columns. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Then these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me, I lift my lamp beside the golden door. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me, I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So we'll see if whoever has it comes around and I have to go trick-or-treating. All right, we're going on to the next one. Oh, let me see if you guys have anything to say.
All participants are now muted.
Oh, sorry.
All participants are now unmuted.
McLuhan again repeats himself, page after page.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've never perceived.
On the level of,
everybody gets it.
That's the first time I've perceived
on the level
quote,
of titillating.
Though,
yes, the teeming wretched quote.
Huddled masses. Give me your huddled masses. So that we can use you as slaves.
Obsolete human nature.
Context there.
Human bodies. Right. So I think I was going to say something else. These posters. Nope. No use waiting. Let's carry on with what's said underneath this. I read part of it. Well, I read it all. Somebody talking about it. I read that one. I'm supposed to go on to the next one? Do you want me to read this one again?
Yes.
Gutenberg taught us how to mechanize any operation by breaking it into a series of static steps, thus eliminating the need for individual skill or personal involvement. So no more, like, craft. When the work processes involving human services is broken up into specialized and repeatable tasks, it is possible to scrap human nature. When an individual is only to perform separate, specialist, repeatable tasks on an assembly line pattern, it matters not whether he is bright or dull, loyal or malicious, dedicated or impertinent. That is why Emma Lazarus could confidently envisage a superhuman life for any number of unskilled immigrants. By the time of Franklin, more than two centuries after Gutenberg, both work and society have been pushed far along specialist lines of thought, feeling, and perception. The Emma Lazarus boast that maimed and fragmented people could be rallied to produce a superstate is a simple fact of mechanization and specialism complementary to Ben Franklin's manifesto. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. All right, we got that done. That's the third poster. Now, the fourth poster. Anybody want to say anything before I dive into the fourth poster?
I just wanted to know, what was the manifesto from Benjamin Franklin? What was?
That statement is on the Statue of Liberty.
It's on the Statue of what?
Statue of Liberty. That quote.
Okay. All right. So, it's getting 4:30. Bert's only got half an hour. We must move along. So, the fourth poster has big letters, beyond the, and it has, I think it's the cent sign. Sign for cents, you know, pennies. Beyond the, oh, maybe it means copyright. Oh, it could be copyright. It's got a C with a line through it. Beyond the C copyright, let's say. Work used to mean having a... Oh, I forgot to mute you guys.
All participants are now muted.
Okay. Work used to mean having a particular job with specific hours of work. Today, work is becoming involvement or leisure. No one who is totally involved in his activities and interests ever works. The artist may toil 20 hours a day on a statue, painting, play, movie, or design, but he's always at leisure since nobody could possibly pay him or put a uniform price tag on his time or on what he's doing. Anything that escapes the orbit of the specialist and the repeatable or fragmented, the previous sentence, but he's always at leisure since nobody could possibly pay him or put a uniform price tag on his time or on what he is doing. Anything that escapes the orbit of the specialist and the repeatable or fragmented is literally priceless in quotes. Then, another quote, all the best things in life are free, unquote, because they are total and environmental, like affection and friendship and dialogue and beauty. The vast multi-billion service environments being contrived by the satellite engineers or the anti-pollution campaigns, these are free to everybody as service environments. They are beyond price. They are also beyond the means of the most wealthy individuals who ever existed. They are available to the poor as much as to the wealthy. Private wealth has lost its old privileges and functions. It is thus that our new technologies have not only bypassed free enterprise and the old industrialism, but they've equally bypassed the dreams of Karl Marx and the socialists. Then it says, try this. So that sentence I read you. It is thus that our new technologies have not only bypassed free enterprise and the old industrialism, but they have equally bypassed the dreams of Karl Marx and the socialists. The communists had their sights on something less than what was really happening. Old wealth now creates the new proletariat of dropouts. Enemies of communism are equally distracted and irrelevant in their inability to perceive actual events. And I read that part again. Beyond the sea, the communists had their sights on something leisure that leads U.S. News and World Report to go on to classify it under the headings of vacations, travel, swimming pools, etc. The real leisure is not in these old areas at all. The new leisure is in moonlighting and using one's hobby as a new job and in turning one's job into, quote, doing one's thing, unquote. It is the new involved patterns of work that constitute leisure. Then it looks like the bottom of the page. Work consists in using a fraction of one's abilities, as when making out one's income tax, or in being a bureaucrat, filing reports and securities. Something is sitting on committees. Work consists in using a fraction of one's abilities, as when making out one's income tax, or in being a bureaucrat, filing reports and securities, and sitting on committees. There's a big statement in the middle of the page. It said, $83 billion for leisure, dash, the second line, now the fastest growing business in America. So this is from U.S. News and World Report, September 15, 1969, for a November 69 due line. $83 billion for leisure, now the fastest growing business in America. So, anything else you want me to, well, let's...
All participants are now unmuted.
Anything you get from this that you want to mention?
Well, she somehow stays in the printed, in the book. How will you expand to the digital?
Trying to see how to read this. We read that. You want me to read a bit of this again? Actually, it wasn't that much.
No.
What do you think? Did you get it all? Don't need to hear it again, right? Same old stuff. Software versus hardware. Okay, we go to the next chart. Poster 5. And this is big print. It says, a second. Okay. Mass production has been geared to mass marketing and mass education and huge concentrations of populations. Moreness and bigness were the main forms of economy and efficiency under hardware conditions of fragmented and repeatable work, industry, and marketing. Then, speed renders all forms of... is not nearly as spectacular as the failure to provide themselves with educational programming for the new electric age. Read that again. The American failure in Vietnam is no... The American failure in Vietnam is not nearly as spectacular as the failure to provide themselves with educational programming for the new electric media, for the new electric age. The American failure in Vietnam is not nearly as spectacular as the failure to provide themselves with educational programming for the new electric age, hence cocaine addiction. So you see, they hardware versus software. The the terms of work don't apply. Leisure doesn't really work. Now, this is a good one. Poster 6 is Profile of the 70s. Now, here McLuhan lays out very complex commentary on his own art and takes it further, which nobody has noticed, as far as I know, till I came along. So, the 70s will see, Profile of the 70s. The 70s will see, and this is an italicized, a rampage of ecological legal prosecutions for disservice environments created by old services, unquote. This legal rampage, so services was in quotes at the end, this legal rampage against corporations will seem mysterious, polymorphous, perverse. In fact, it stems from the end of nature, the beginning of the satellite environment. When the planet became the content of a man-made surround, it ceased to be nature for its occupants. It has to be programmed totally from now on. It is our oikos, our household. The 70s will see, and this is in italics, the effects of the end of steel which occurred with the birth of the computer. If we try to run the old hardware technologies with their related markets and credit systems at new electric speeds, it would be the equivalent of pushing a Model T at 100 miles per hour on a new highway. Unless we can slow the rim spin now exerted against the old hardware, its components will collapse in the biggest depression ever. The 70s will see, and this is another italicized thing, the end of sex as a specialist interest. This is already evident in sex having become a fun thing, as much as old-style management patterns. Then, the next one, the 70s will see, in italics, the end of childhood in quotes. As Rowan and Martin, whose laugh-in caught on at once with the 4 and 8-year-olds, no, it says, the 70s will see the end of childhood. Ask Rowan and Martin, whose laugh-in caught on at once with the 4 and 8-year-olds. The 70s will see, then the quotation is, the end of dress and the return to costume. Related to this will be the end of jobs and the return to roles. There's the guy you don't like. That's a threat.
Yeah, am I unmuted?
No. You're unmuted.
We've just adapted our words. Leisure isn't leisure. That U.S. News and World Report referred to, now called the service economy, now service?
Service economy, right. Yeah.
Mass production, mass marketing.
We're now
mass
a service
education.
Economy. We don't produce hardware.
It's serious now. This is good, you know, services we provide. While at the same time, I worked for the Department of Human Services. And I wouldn't define it as services that are being provided. And human services departments within private companies they changed the name to human resources. They were managing their resources that were humans as opposed to providing service to humans.
That's right. It's the content, the human gets wiped out by the printing press 500 years ago. It then is the wiping out of humans is archetypal in government bureaucracies in the 20th century and in concentration camps. It's like the human being is squared. The obsolescence of the human being is squared.
Well, we're recycled.
Gene, there is an electric age that's going around. Electric circuitry is empowering and growing another body.
We're scrap metal, Bob. Human beings are scrap metal, just being recycled and reused.
No, you're able to communicate with all kinds of people. You're just emphasizing the chemical disaster, the chemical body disaster. Look at all the software joys you have.
Yes, the
all the information you process.
The traditional role of the human being, the traditional role, has been scrapped.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Everything is done for it. In the year 90, your arms will hang to your side. Something like that. They'll hang limp. Okay, look, let's finish this this major chart.
It's interesting what he says about the obsolescence of childhood, because nowadays it's even more accentuated. Children don't go out and play. They watch TV or have their cell phones or their laptops.
Their fascism has grown. Now, that's a limited word. It's just a joke to use. It's more complicated and involved than that. But the end of childhood, the children become a workforce. So McLuhan's terms require my refinement. Got to get into the four body parts. So let me read this. The end of childhood. Ask Rowan and Martin, whose laughing caught on at once with the 4 and 8 year olds. The 70s will see, quote, in italics, the end of dress and the return to costume. Related to this will be the end of jobs and the return to roles. So that's that. And then the 70s will see role-playing instead of work, work in quotes. Work will become leisure by virtue of involvement. The 70s will see the end of megalopolis simply because it generates too many disservices. Megalopolis was Don Thiel's term for the global village. McLuhan didn't use it very much, but he does here. The 70s will see the end of megalopolis simply because it generates too many disservices. The quest for roots and the return to direct handling of the soil is the new pastime for urban populations. The quest for roots and the return to direct handling of the soil is the new pastime for urban populations. The 70s will see, now dig this, the end of solutions. No more solutions. The end of solutions. Pattern recognition via inspection of multiple problems will bring an end to the hidden environments. So it doesn't mean a disaster. The end of solutions. We will have solutions.
Right.
By the massaging of the different environments. Let's see if he explains this a little more. The end of solutions. Pattern recognition via inspection of multiple problems. So inspection of multiple problems will bring an end to the hidden environments. The 70s will see, and this is in italics, the hidden environments, then regular print, that cause multitudes of unexpected changes, italics again, pushed up into full visibility. This goes with the fact of knowledge taking over from experience. This is a return to the total environment and equilibrium managed as an art form. And the Balinese say, quote, we have no art, we do everything as well as possible, unquote. So I forgot to mute you guys, but you were quiet. What do you say?
Bob, that end of childhood reference makes me recall, makes me recall McLuhan talking about the challenge of for children, their teenagers, to grow up. There was some reference.
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember. There's something about he makes a reference about the challenge. If you don't grow up, or some challenge of growing up will be the new challenge for children.
Yeah, people can't grow. They're for everybody. Everybody becomes a 4-year-old, says McLuhan.
Yeah.
Emotionally, the tenor of a 4-year-old. All ages. That's. Kids.
Yeah, and it's the 4-year-olds raising the children. So it's the end of childhood. They become responsible for themselves, I think, at an earlier age, too, because of the schizophrenia of their parents.
Yeah, and also they have to work earlier, or they have to tend to the service aspects of their younger brothers and services, brothers and sisters. So the 70s will see the hidden environments, a little later, push up into full visibility. So everything's going to become visible. The hidden environments that cause multitudes of unexpected changes pushed up into full visibility. This goes with the fact of knowledge taking over from experience. Oh, that's what I was going to say. The kids today, you know, they're inside. They're dealing with knowledge, not physical experience. So they have no social skills, supposedly, and this and that. But they're very savvy on the services, information services level, so they end up getting the better jobs. And the other people have been around a long time say, shit, who are these young kids coming in? But their knowledge takes over from the experience of the 50-year-old guy, 50-year employee. The hidden environments pushed up into full visibility. This goes with the fact of knowledge taking over from experience. This is a return to the total environment and equilibrium managed as an art form. As the Balinese say, quote, we have no art, we do everything as well as possible, unquote. The 70s will see the end of the East-West dichotomy. That's in italics. Both will become completely interpenetrated with each other, with the East on an outer trip and the West on an inner trip. The current panic about drugs, like the 20s panic about booze, results from the direct impact of electric circuitry in restructuring human sensibilities. Radio in the 20s, TV in the 60s. The 70s will see the end of conglomerates. That's in italics. Since these dynastic weddings between corporations are merely a transitional stage of the disappearance of national economies, the 70s will see, in italics, the full emergence of the global theater as an arena in which the audience will be the cast. So he's a little late. Dobbs was already out there doing it many years before this famous Canadian DJ. The 70s will see the end of the bureaucratic structure of the Roman Church. Gutenberg technology proliferated Protestant schisms and it consolidated the centralist bureaucracy of Rome. Electrotechnology ensures universal liturgical lay participation and equally ensures the dissipation of centralist clerical bureaucracy. Read that again. The end of the bureaucratic structure of the Roman Church. Gutenberg technology proliferated Protestant schisms and consolidated the centralist bureaucracy of Rome. Electrotechnology ensures universal liturgical lay participation and equally ensures the dissipation of centralist clerical bureaucracy. Okay, we did that one. A lot of the effects of the end of steel, the end of sex, the end of childhood, the end of dress and return to committee.
Listen, I am just told you that you are obsoleting. You're obsoleting the bureaucracy of Rome.
Yes. The end of Megalopolis, the end of solutions, the hidden environments that cause, what was that, that are pushed up into full visibility. The end of the East-West dichotomy. You see how the Berlin Wall couldn't hold up against this. The 70s will see the end of conglomerates. Did we do that one? Yeah. The 70s will see the end of conglomerates. Since these dynastic weddings between corporations are merely a transitional stage of the disappearance of national economies. The 70s will see the full emergence of the global theater as an arena in which the audience will be the cast. Go to your local football game and look at the huge screens they got. All right. So that's... What? Do I hear mocking tones? I think that's it. How much time we got left?
Yeah. The end of time.
Listen to this. Listen to this. November 13th, 1969, the government, the Department of External Affairs, writes to McLuhan, and they make a proposal. Dear Professor McLuhan, you may be aware that a McLuhan Day, in quotes, McLuhan Day, devoted to the study of your works was featured at the annual Congress of Les Compagnons de Lure, held in France from August 24th, 1969. Les Compagnons de Lure is an association which was formed after the Second World War to encourage the development of the graphic arts and which holds monthly meetings and annual congresses at Lure in Haute Province. Do you want to sign that, Roxy?
Looking what?
Moving forward, the McLuhan Day... What?
You're saying lawyer. It's not Loire?
Yeah, Loire Valley?
Where all the cousins are. Yeah.
Yeah, you pronounce lawyer Loire. Lawyer is L-A-W-Y-E-R. L-A-W-Y-E-R.
I know.
Lawyer.
No.
Hello. Hello. Hello? No.
Okay.
The McLuhan Day program. The McLuhan Day program was chaired by Paul Boudreau, press counselor at the Canadian Embassy in Paris. An audiovisual montage and a publication entitled "Understanding Marshall McLuhan" had been prepared, and this publication formed the basis for an animated discussion. Films made for the National Film Board about you by Andre Martin were also shown. Mr. Boudreau asked in a letter to me that a copy of the book would be forwarded to you, and wrote in part, quote, "You might wish to tell McLuhan that we very much feel he is a major trump in projecting Canada's image, if not to the general public, at least to the professionals of communications. Yours sincerely, H.A. Stevens, Head of Information Division." Well, you know, they have me for the poster child stuff. We went over that last week. I just like meeting little kids and trying to communicate with them. And the Monday show is a great rehearsal for it. So I think I did it all. I think I did all the parts. So, anybody got anything to say?
Well, I'm just thinking about all these ideas you present about the end of everything.
Yes. Yes. The good news.
That was already 1969.
Yeah. 47 years ago. 46 years.
Yeah.
The end of sex, the end of childhood, the end of dress. The end of solutions, the end of megalopolis, the end of the hidden environments. The end of the East-West dichotomy, the end of the commerce, the full emergence of the... What?
The end of nations.
Is that what you said? The end of nations, yeah.
Nation.
Yes, the end of nation.
Yeah.
Am I saying it wrong? No. Well, Bert, no. You got to go, Bert? 5 o'clock?
Yes.
Already went.
Yes, but one thing. So, Tom here. I'm here. Do you hear me?